Hello, I'm Luke Halpern from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insights, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. In today's episode, I discuss the upcoming American College of Cardiology Legislative Conference with the chair of its Health Affairs Committee, William Van Decker, a professor of medicine at Temple University Lewis Katz School of Medicine. Dr. Van Decker explains the focus of the conference, how emerging technologies are shaping the role of cardiology policy, and the wide-reaching implications for pharmacists. And so my first question for you, Dr. Van Decker, is can you provide an overview of the upcoming ACC Legislative Conference?
Sure. Greatly appreciate the opportunity. Greatly appreciate the opportunity to interact with the CV team, because all of us deliver quality cardiology healthcare. And obviously, this is a big conference for us to go to Washington to have our voices heard for care delivery and access to quality. You know, Ledge Conference is an annual event for us. We go down from Sunday, where we have some preliminary meetings, Monday, where we have some educational stuff on the current advocacy front and what's going on in policy delivery. And then Tuesday, when we all go to the congressional offices to talk about some key talking points that we've thought about. You know, we're blessed this year. We're going to have way more than 50 cardiovascular team members showing up, with nurse practitioners, nurses, and pharmacists, in addition to our over 400 cardiologists. So it's a good group, and we appreciate a broad-based group of people interested in what's going on and also going into the offices to speak to Congress and their aides, right? And so that's important. You know, we have one, two, three, four, about five key points that we're going to be talking about. I think the first four of which are probably would touch pharmacists in some way or other. And we could talk about those in general, and then we can go to some specific questions you may have. One of the topics we're going to go talking about is telehealth flexibilities. These have been incredibly helpful since the pandemic in touching patients. And we're looking to support the Connect Act, which is H.R. Bill 4206 and Senate Bill 1261. As you can well imagine, from a group of people who talk to patients every day, staying in touch with them, especially dealing with their problems with immobility and transport problems, and some people who can't get to either physicians or pharmacies in rural health, you know, some way to contact them is important. We found this important for med reconciliation. We found it good to stress med compliance. We found it a good way to get med refills through. You know, we're hoping that Congress will indeed continue to at least extend these flexibilities, if not make them permanent. I think most people in the healthcare field would say this has been a plus to patients. Yeah, the second thing that we're going to be talking about is restoring some access to cardiovascular rehab in the home. There is some bills on both the Senate and the House side to allow this to occur, House Resolution 783 and Senate 248. You know, we see this as important even on the medication side as well as the exercise side, right? Because rehab is important for the total patient to understand what the different pieces of their healthcare are. And, you know, we have a lot of rural areas and a lot of people who are doing home exercises where home rehab really does work for them. This would be a helpful way to continue to do this. It did work during the pandemic. And once again, we look at it as a big way to stress med compliance, go over med education with patients, and give them a good sense for how this plays into their healthcare for the future. So we're looking forward to talking about that. The third thing we're going to talk about is improving access to remote monitoring, especially for our maternal patients. I think you've implied this in your questions. You know, remote monitoring in this day and age, like telehealth, is a way of advancing technology to stay in touch with patients, to be able to figure out what's going on with them, whether they need medication adjustments or not, making sure they have answers to their questions. There is a bill in both the House and the Senate, H.R. 4977 and Senate Bill 141, which is termed the MOM Act, which essentially attempts to create a funding source for blood pressure monitors, glucose monitors, pulse oxes for pregnant women in the peripartum era when obviously they're prone to cardiovascular complications, which is a big issue. May get them on the right blood pressure pills early, may get them to understand blood pressure pills in the realm of being pregnant, which is not the same as not being pregnant, allow us to get them maybe set up for a lifetime of remote monitoring, but something that we see is good across the medical spectrum and that we are going to talk about. And then the last thing, which probably is near and dear to pharmacists' hearts as it is to physicians' hearts, is we're going to spend a good amount of time talking about streamlining prior auth. I mean, obviously to us, this is not just our testing and our therapies and procedures, but it's also tiered medications and our specialty medications, pulmonary hypertension, and a variety of other stuff. There is a bill in the House and the Senate improving seniors' timely access to care, H.R. 3514 and Senate 1816, that address Medicare Advantage, which is the only thing Congress can address, that codifies some of the changes that CMS made in a draft rule in an attempt to make prior auth less burdensome. I know for the physician constituency, I'm sure for the pharmacist constituency as well, there's got to be a ton of paperwork that goes back and forth on this stuff that takes up huge amounts of time. And we see that there certainly should be ways to make this quicker, unburden all of our healthcare providers in this chain, especially since most stuff is getting approved anyway after prolonged back and forths. And so we're going to spend a lot of time talking about prior auth, what it does for patient delay, what it does for all of our healthcare team and burnout and paperwork. And so we're going to spend a long amount of time with that. The last piece, obviously, we always talk about when we go down there is making sure that all of healthcare delivery and cardiovascular disease is sustainable. We have to have the resources and across a variety of different venues and geographies to do this. And we appreciate the pharmacy group that comes along with the nurse practitioners and helping us amplify that voice and what it needs to take care of patients. So we look forward to it as an educational basis. Within the ACC, we look at it as a team-based basis. We're happy to see team members broadly show up and are interested. And we look at it as, a participatory democracy where even within the pharmacy societies and the nursing societies, we should all be expressing our views on what we believe it takes to deliver quality care because we're the ones involved in that care delivery. So that's our overview of the conference. I know you have some questions that probably feed into some of this, but I did want to mention the opportunity to give you a feel for a lot of the work that's gone into this whole situation.
Yeah, that was a great overview. I really appreciate that because I honestly, that taught me some new things too. And I think especially you definitely mentioned some aspects that are poised to impact pharmacists in some way or another. You mentioned prior auth, and that's just one of the topics. And so given all these focuses of the upcoming conference, what are the most significant legislative and regulatory updates in cardiology that pharmacists should be aware of, particularly regarding their impacts on their day-to-day practices?
Yeah, I think I tried to highlight that in our overview. I think number one, which I had left for the last, is prior auth. I don't think there's any part of anyone touching a patient that doesn't find prior auth and paperwork and too many computer clicks as overburdensome right now. We have that not just in the physician community, but in all the CV team community. There's got to be a way to streamline this. Hopefully AI may have some pluses, but we don't know till we see it come out of the bag, right? So it's going to need some guardrails as it comes out, even from your guys' end, from the pharmacy end and from the physician end. And we are interested and involved in talking about guardrails for AI and using AI for appropriate means. And we certainly, as a guardrail, do not want AI used for prior auth. We don't want it used as a gatekeeper for screening prescriptions through pharmacists. There's a human touch in all of this, and we need to have the appropriate guardrails for the patients at the appropriate time. So I see prior auth as a number one issue in all of this for all of the CV team. I think that the things that improve med compliance and give people some med education so that the pharmacist can assist in that as well when they see the patient, the telehealth stuff, the CV rehab stuff at home. I think, you know, I think the pharmacy group has long understood that education has been important to patients and does provide education at the time of med dispensing. And I think that that's been very helpful to patients. So the more they hear it, the better it is. And so we look forward to more of those kinds of interactions with patients so that they're engaged in their care. And then the last couple of things are just the smaller things, you know, the remote monitoring. I think that we will see a little bit more data available and blood pressures and stuff. And that may help us a little bit in making more timely adjustments over time. But we'll see, have to see how that goes. But I think that, you know, all of those are the ones on the table for right now. There's certainly going to be stuff in the future, but I think that some of the topics coming up that we'll be dealing with will be timely to all of that.
Yeah, definitely agree there. And ultimately, all these policy changes in the national, state level, the goal is to improve patient outcomes. Where do you see in cardiology the greatest need for updated policy?
Yeah, wow. You know, policy is one of those things that is always evolving, and therefore you can learn from what you did right and maybe learn from what you're doing wrong, hopefully. I think that, you know, number one, especially given some of the stuff that's gone on over the summer, you know, stability in access to patients across many venues is important. I mean, all of us have providers in rural communities. All of us have pharmacies in rural communities. They're going to be facing a certain amount of challenges with some changes going on. We'll have to see how that goes. You know, both from the pharmacy delivery end, from the provider delivery end, we need some clarity on how policy is going to move forward for access, because you can't make plans on how you're going to devise care delivery if the rules are changing every few months. So I think, you know, part of our voice and message in a couple of weeks is going to be, you know, we need some quality access. It has to be across all the CV team, because we have a lot of older, sicker patients now that we have to understand the stability of that model and make sure we get things done right. Now, the second point I would bring up, which we didn't talk about, won't be something we'll probably talk about in a couple of weeks, but is on our mind. You know, the value-based models for delivering care quality are important to seek new ways to do things better. And the college has been supportive of exploring those kinds of things. We just got to be careful, and this includes all the CV team, that those value-based models are not just cost-cutting models for the sake of cutting cost, and that there are quality measures in them, right? Yeah, so from the pharmacy perspective, the biggest piece to us has been, you know, docs in the value-based modeling are penalized for the amount of cost a patient accrues in treating their disease process. And there's more and more of that going on. Recognize that the cost of high-tech meds is not a small number in what the doc is getting penalized for. So DOACs, SGLT2 inhibitors, GLP-1s are all very high in cost in the cardiovascular population, and attribute it to the cardiologist, who then comes out looking like they've had a quality hit because they are approving or trying to get their patients on the more modern medical therapies, which therefore only obviously causes more bumps in the prior authorization road. So, you know, we continue to look at the value-based models. We want to continue to explore those. We think they could be helpful in policy, but we just got to be careful that when pharmacy comes into play and the cost of pharmacy comes into play, that there's some realization of where that cost is coming from, going to what's reasonable long-term ways to deal with this, what may be unreasonable long-term ways to deal with this. So I think that that's an important piece of the puzzle, especially involving pharmacy, to think about for the future.
Yeah, for sure. And you were at the top, you were talking about how all these different medical societies are coming together at this legislative summit in DC. Are there specific areas, I'm wondering, where better alignment and collaboration between cardiologists and pharmacists, whether it be in real-world practice or at a broader level between societies, where can this collaboration be particularly effective in patient care?
Yeah, well, I think that the voice of everybody who touches a patient and realizes where the complexities are and what the patient needs to get the right piece of therapy at the right time is helpful. You know, I think that the ACC has always been thankful that the pharmacists kind of share a common vision of some of this, right? We all want the highest quality medications. We want them at the most reasonable, sustainable cost, whatever that may be. And we want the patients to have good compliance with the medications that are going to be most appropriate for them, and at least understand why their compliance is bad, whether it be, you know, perceptions or whether it be side effect profiles. I think that with that shared vision, as long as we're communicating and speaking with one voice about those key components to policymakers and to each other, and trying to understand where the hiccups in the road are coming from, I think that we will all do better. You know, obviously on a local level, I think communication is still key. Going back to this AI computer generated world, I have enough problems these days through Epic with emails going back and forth and keeping up with different things when the old style used to be a telephone call and something that was maybe a more cleaner handoff, but also a more complicated, phone tag kind of situation. So got to find a way to manage that appropriately. I think that all of us are looking for ways to continue to foster and improve communication, but I don't think that AI will be the total answer for now. All of a sudden, rather than a typed email, I'm getting an automatic email that may not have personalized patient input to it by a pharmacist who's seeing the patient. So I think that as we continue to work on communication, as we continue to watch how AI impacts the interactions between prescribing providers and all the rest of the CV team, will be an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like so many times patients will look to policy changes as a means to hopefully, have access to new treatments or have just updates to their care and have their care optimized. But it's hard for them to see it in the real world. Can you provide an example of a recent policy change or a potential one that is in the works or that people are advocating for that you believe can have a direct and measurable positive impact on a patient's adherence to their cardiovascular medication regimen or any aspect of their cardiovascular care?
So I'll start this off by just reiterating a couple of points I think I've hit a couple of times already, and then I'll go into the newer point that I think would be helpful to more round out your question. I think that the telehealth concept and rehab services where there's more touches, and maybe pharmacy can be involved in some of that rehab, I think are still right now the upfront ways that this is going to happen, because I think it engages the patient population. And right now, engaging the patient is so important because they've become so complex and they're older, and their ability to handle electronics and Zoom and all is not always the greatest either. And we have to deal with people as they are. And so, but I do think that's the beginning. The second point that you bring up that we haven't touched on yet is I do think that advancing education in the world of medications, both within the providers, the pharmacists, and the patients, is our mission, as a group overall. I'll take one recent example, right? The ACC just published within the last 2 months its ACC Scientific Statement 2025 on the management of obesity in adults with heart failure. Obviously, obesity plays a big role in symptoms in heart failure and how those play out. And obesity plays a big role on pharmacokinetics and all the different mix of meds that we use. I think the ACC has taken an appropriate step in saying obesity is a target in heart failure, and especially may even be a really good target in heart failure or preserved EF. And that we need to, A, recognize that, make sure it's appropriately diagnosed, make sure there's appropriate counseling that's going on. But then in the medical realm, and I think the paper does a good job of this, it talks about two things. Number one, it talks about exploring the role of GLP-1s in this group. And I think that we're still in the exploring range with a lot of early positive data. And I think the more that we can grab all of that as a group and a society, that would be important to understand and know. And then number two, I think it even more so points out that, as both pharmacists look at this mix and providers order it and talk to patients about the complexities, they're usually on foundational medical therapy already, including diuretics. And so modifying regimens, if indeed a GLP-1 is warranted, modifying regimens so it fits and so that the patient tolerates it and so that it's been appropriate education both in the office and in the pharmacy when they go, they know side effects to look for. I think those kinds of scientific statements, and I think this is like one of the newer ones coming out right now, certainly leads to advancements. Now, what the cost does and what that does to value-based models, we can deal with all that another time. But I think right now, you know, we should start with the science, and we should start with how do we make the science work, given that there are other meds on board, and then where do we go from there? So I think that's a great example. And hopefully, the pharmacy group will also think about it some. Certainly, we're their educational piece when people start showing up with GLP-1s that are going to be approved and are already on significant diuretics and other hypotensive meds. So an important thing to think about.
Definitely agree that realm of medicine is kind of untapped generally, like in regards to its overall history. These new indications that are being granted, there's got to be a lot of more research that is being conducted and just waiting and seeing what is eventually approved for these new indications that could be related to reducing cardiovascular risk. And throughout this, you definitely touched on, emerging technologies and AI, telehealth, the use of remote patient monitoring or new drug classes such as GLP-1s. How do you see these emerging technologies specifically influencing the legislative and regulatory landscape for cardiovascular care in the next few years?
Well, I think that this is going to be a dialogue. And I think that, the current era of financial stresses that the nation is feeling means that every discussion is going to have to be prolonged with a lot of reasonable rationale. And I think that we're going to have to look at this as a long-term discussion. I think all of us want to get emerging technologies moving forward. At the same time, we want them in a controlled manner for the patients. And we want to make sure that there is an outcome monitor on the back end so that whatever does get put into place, we know that it has worked, other than somebody implemented something and they have something to talk about. So I think, I know that a lot of medical societies will push for this, that outcomes monitoring as some things go through is going to be important to prove that really we've made something that is better and not just more complex, because complexity, unfortunately, doesn't always lead to the better outcome. So I think we're going to be talking a lot about that.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think a good way to finish up our conversation is just kind of highlighting are some of the challenges that people may encounter in bridging the gap between legislative intent and practical realities of patient care. And what are some solutions to these challenges?
Yeah. Well, that's always the million-dollar question in policy, right? Because everyone looks at policy through a different lens. Some through a way different lens, some through a minor different lens, but it's okay. The philosophical piece of this, I think, is that everybody involved in the discussion, everybody involved in the dialogue needs to say that the U.S. needs a healthcare system. And it's got to work for all of its people across all of its different geographies and all of its different venues. And therefore, there's probably not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution to all of this. And we've got to find ways to be flexible, and we have to find ways to leverage technology without letting technology run its own course, because there is still an art to the delivery of medical care in addition to the science. And it's that combination that's so important. And I think that we need to once again focus on outcomes and keep open discussion with both the patient groups and all the different professionals involved in delivery of that healthcare to try to come to good decisions. And once again, my little rejoinder, that little decision piece can't just be based on cost. It has to be based on value, right? Quality divided by cost. And is the quality going up? And what are the quality markers that we know are working?
How many creatinines do you need to draw to make sure that somebody's not having an adverse effect from a medication when you've now put a bunch of them on board all at the same time? I think that as long as the United States stays true to discussion and the furthering of science through all of this, we'll eventually be okay. But I do think it's going to take work.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to almost conclude this. And just to wrap things up before we end things up, is there anything else that you would like to add before?
I think I've kind of talked more than enough, but I would be remiss if I didn't say we appreciate the opportunity. I'm a representative today of the ACC because I chair its Health Affairs Policy Committee nationally, a job that I fully understand the weight of, and I represent a lot of different people. But we greatly appreciate the CV team, all the different skill sets they bring. We recognize that there's a lot of different things that go into quality patient care and a lot of touches, especially on the educational and personal touch basis across a variety of different places. And so we appreciate the opportunity to talk some, and I'm sure we'll be talking onward in the future. And I think we should all maintain the same goal that I mentioned to you before. We want quality care and medications, access, and good patient outcomes. And I think as long as we're all thinking about patient-centered work here, we'll all come to a good place.
Absolutely. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you today, Dr. Van Decker. Thank you for taking this time. Really appreciate it. The discussion was great. That's a great way to wrap things up.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Pharmacy Focus. Tune in the next episode for more expert insights. Listen to the episode wherever you get your podcasts or on pharmacytimes.com. Thanks for listening.